So we're actually holding on Kofidalad on the Aleph 7th line, but it's kind of in the middle of a thing, so we may as well go back to the bottom of Kofchof Gimel on the Beis and three lines from the bottom, and then repeat a bit so we have it all at once. All right, so we're in the middle of discussing like this. Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are arguing over a point. We mentioned you have a case where you have a piece of clothing that was ripped in half, more than a majority of its length or width, where we said that the tumor that it had before goes away from it as a result of that. And we talked about maybe it depends. We heard Rabbi Barabu had said that's only if you troubled it, because then we can be sure that you're going to rip the majority, otherwise not, because we're afraid you might not. And then we had Rav Huna had mentioned a concept that this whole din only applies only if the unripped part of the beged is not even kedei ma'apurus, is not big enough for a scarf or a turban or some piece of clothing like that. But then we would say that the tumor goes away from it. But if there's still an untorn part, let's say we assume that a scarf is a piece, I don't know, 3 feet by 1 foot or something. So let's say we have a talus that originally was, I don't know, 5 feet by 2 feet. So if you rip it more than a majority, you might still have an untorn part of it that's large enough to make a ma'apurus, that's large enough to make a scarf. And Rav Huna is telling us in that case, then it would still be considered connected, and it would still have the tumor that it did before. Well, not so much because it's a keli. 3 by 3 etzbois is enough to be a beged. But here we have when there's left of it kedei ma'apurus, it still has the same name as before. It's still called a beged. In other words, there's the minimum amount of a beged d'oraisa, which is 3 by 3 etzbois. But then there's, practically speaking, what people use as a significant beged, like a talus or a ma'apurus, which is larger.
But if we change this in 3 months.
Because we're saying, for it to be makabel tumor in the first place, as long as it's 3 by 3, right. Here we're talking about that it had tumor, and now you're ripping it. So we're saying, once there's not left kedei ma'apurus, then you're mevatel the original function of it. Anyway, so then we discuss Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan argue now over the point. Okay. So the question now we had, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish discussed the question, does the same thing apply to leather? Do we say that once leather is cut or split or whatever, then even if you sew it up, it's going to be the same as cloth, and therefore it's never going to have its original strength and its original integrity? That's what Rabbi Yochanan says. Therefore, the same din would apply to leather. Whereas Rish Lakish says that not. He says, cholim, because skin, the leather, that is able to regain its original strength when it's sewn back up. So we mentioned a couple of possible objections to Rish Lakish from various Mishnayos and Braises. So here's another one. 3 lines from the bottom. Well, again, we'll start over 3 lines from the bottom of Kofchof Gimel Amud Beis. Masiv Rabbi Yehuda. Tanur Shenitma, an oven that became Tomei, and then the Pasuk says you have to break it because you can't dip it in a mikveh or anything to make it Tahor. Kesem Matahari Noisei. So how can you make it Tahor? In other words, again, so it became Tomei. Now you need how much do you need to break it apart to make it Tahor? So like this, an oven, again, is normally, Rashi describes, is made shaped like a pot. It's shaped like a pot with a hole on top. When you want to attack, sort of like a cone, yeah, kind of. The point is it has a hole on the top and it widens towards the bottom, right? When you want to attach it to the ground, you put it on the ground and you put some plaster or mud or whatever around it in order to, among other things. So first of all, that holds it to the ground. Second of all, it also thickens the walls of the oven so it retains heat better. That stuff is called tefillah. So that mud or clay or whatever that you smear around the whole thing, but in particular, you smear it all the way down to the bottom. So that also, besides that it thickens the walls, it also attaches it to the ground.
You smear on the top.
You
line.
Smear all over it. You smear all over the outside walls of it in order that it'll retain its heat, because that way you have to retain the heat. But in addition, with a part that's towards the bottom also helps stick it to the ground. You have other Rishonim also who learn that usually what you would do is you would put it on top of some stones in order that you have a solid base for it, and then you use the tefillah also attaches it to the stones. Anyway, For now, Keter Matarino. So again, how do you make this oven tar? Choker L'Shlosha. You divide it into three parts. Because again, if you divide it into only two, one or the other of them is going to be the roiv. And if you have roiv of it is still intact, then that part is still tummy. The goyer es tefillah, you scrape off the tefillah, you scrape off the clay all around it. Ad sheyehei ba'aretz, until it's on the ground. So what it means until it's on the ground, you have a couple of different possibilities among Rishonim. Rashi says it means you have to scrape off all of the clay all the way down to the ground. You can't just stop within a couple of tefachim on the ground, as Rameyer is going to say. You have other explanations. Another one is that ad sheyehei ba'aretz means that you have to cut it or break it all the way down to the ground. As the Gemara is going to say later, we're talking about when you're breaking it vertically, where you're making it into vertical pieces, so each piece has to be completely detached from the other one all the way down to the ground. Horizontally, we'll discuss later. And another possibility of ad sheyehei ba'aretz means that you have to actually have it be on the bare ground, not on top of the stones that you had it on as its base. Anyway, that's the Chachamim. Rav Meir Oimer, Enes Tzarech Loi Ligur Es HaTfela. Rav Meir says you don't have to scrape off the clay, all of it. V'loi Ad Sheyehei Ba'aretz, you don't have to get it all the way down to the ground. Ela Mamatim Rifnim, Me'Abba Tfachim, all you have to do is reduce the size of it, or reduce the size of the clay from the inside down to less than, Mibifnim Me'Abba Tfachim, until you get less than 4 Tfachim. In other words, he says, as long as you have the bottom, I don't care if it's still attached to the ground, I don't care if it still has some of the plaster, some of the clay left on it, as long as that part is less than 4 tefachim tall, then you're good.
How much is a sukkah needed in height?
What does a sukkah have to do with this?
No,
we're learning about art.
I know.
Okay, so a sukkah has to be 10 tefachim. That has nothing to do with this. Let's keep our focus, please. You know, you have the Gemara tells us in Shabbos that Rav Chiya tells Rav when Rebbe is talking about one topic, don't ask him a question on a different topic. That's not relevant. Okay. I'm obviously not as expert as Rebbe, but yeah, come on. Okay. So the point is, Kim Mayat Lomidalad. The bottom line is, Rav Yumi asks, looking at Rameyer's opinion, if you get the plaster down, the clay down to less than 4 tefachim close to the ground, or you cut apart the pieces of the oven themselves, until the cuts go within 4 tefachim of the ground, mi hatar, at any rate it's tar, so why should it be? Am I lema hacholim v'koy? Shouldn't we say that it still has, once you put it back together, it still has its strength? Yeah, they still have the plaster, still holds it together, it still holds it to the ground, etc. Following Rish Lakish's opinion, following Rish Lakish's logic, we should say it's still tummy. Amalei Rava, so Rava says to Rabbi Yemiya, so what's your problem? The Eimah Midrabanan, instead of asking on Rish Lakish from the opinion of Rav Meir, better you can prove his point based on looking at the opinion of the Rabbanan, where we said, Gerdas at Tfilad Sheyehei Ba'aretz, so you have to scrape off the clay all the way to the bottom, meaning, in other words, apparently the Chachamim do accept this concept of Cholim, that it'll have its strength, and therefore you have to divide it completely apart, just like with the letter.
Because
they're saying that you have to scrape off the clay all the way to the bottom so that it's not attached to the ground and the pieces are not attached to each other, etc. So therefore we see apparently they do accept that idea that if it's only partially detached, that's not enough, which is the same as Rish Lakish's point. So why are you trying to contradict him from Rameyer when instead the Chachamim seem to be saying exactly his point?
So what's the Chiddush for Rish Lakish?
Because Rish Lakish is talking about leather and here we're talking about an oven. The point remains, in other words, that the Chachamim apparently accept Rish Lakish's principle of cholim. Ella Omar Rava, so Rava says no. That's not the, if the oven is tameh, everybody agrees that you have to cut it completely apart so that the pieces are not at all attached and they don't have their plaster, etc. What the Braisa means is like this: Tanush and Nitma Kesed Matara Noiso. If the oven becomes tameh, then how do you make it tahor? How much do you need to break it in order for it to be considered broken and therefore tahor? Divrei Hakol. So on that part, everybody will agree. Both Rav Meir and Chachamim will agree. Choka L'Shloisha. You have to break it into three parts. V'gurdas HaTfilad Sheyehei Ba'aretz. You have to scrape off all the clay until you scrape all the way to the bottom, or until you detach it from the ground, or until you break apart the pieces all the way down to the ground. Now, so that part, there's no machlokas of Rameyer and the Chachamim. That part, they're both accepting Rish Lakish's principle that cholim, that as long as you have it, it's still partially attached, it's still considered strong. What is the machlokas? The machlokas is, rather, says Rava, if a person lachatchila wants to make his oven in such a way that it won't be able to become tamei, kesed hu oseh, how should he do to begin with? How should he construct the oven in the first place so it won't have the din of an oven? So that the choker shloisha begurus atfilad shehebaret. So the chachamim will say same thing. You have to cut it into three pieces and scrape off the clay until there's no clay left all the way down to the ground. That would be the chachamim. Reb Meir Omer, and that Reb Meir would say enasarach lo ligurus atfilah b'loyad shehebaret. But there, you don't have to scrape off all the clay. You don't have to get all the way down to the bottom. It's enough if you scraped it off to within four tefachim of the ground. Or according to the Rash in Masechta Kelim, Rabbi Shimshon wrote a pirush on Masechta Kelim, and he explains that it means that you don't have to cut apart the pieces all the way down to the ground. It's enough if you cut them apart to within four tefachim of the ground. The Rashi is saying the plaster. The Rashi says it means cutting it actually apart. All you have to do is reduce it to less than four tefachim in height. In other words, either scrape off the plaster to within four tefachim of the ground, or cut apart the earthenware pieces until the cuts go within four tefachim of the ground. Nothing to do with that. Once it's less than four, as we're going to say soon, as the Gemara is going to bring soon, an oven less than four tefachim is not considered an oven. So Rava is saying the Mishnah has nothing to do directly with the machloikas of Rish Lakish. Well, does sort of, but the Mishnah actually says Rava comes down on the side of Rish Lakish. That we do say this concept of cholim, that when you have something that can retain its original structural integrity, like leather, or in this case, like an oven, then it has to be broken or cut completely apart in order to lose its tumah. The machlokas, or meir, and the chachamim, is only if you're trying to construct an oven to begin with in such a way that it won't be makabel tumah. So then the chachamim say it has to be cut apart completely, and Rameir, or scraped off completely, and Rameir says that's not necessary.
That's what you do when you build from new?
When you're building it from new, yeah.
So you just make it in three different pieces.
You make it in three different pieces, yeah, and then yeah.
And you glue it together.
Yeah, the truth is it's not so simple. You have Mishnayos Kalim, and in Mishnayos Kalim you have a number of different cases. Depends whether you're cutting it horizontally or vertically, which is something that the Gemara is going to mention soon. It also depends. It depends when you put them back together, what you put them back together with. How strong it is, what kind of structural integrity it has. So there's a number of different issues.
So there's two issues. One is too
much. One is where it already became tamei, and the pasuk says you need to break it. And the other is where it did not yet become tamei, and you want to avoid it being able to become tamei. So Rava's. So Rav, that's where you have the machlokes of Rameir and the Chacham. But the original the case where it's already tamei says Rava, both the Chachamim and Rameir would agree that you have to cut it, that you have to scrape off all the clay and you have to cut it completely apart. Ad sheyehei ba'aretz, etc. All the way down. Or you have to scrape off all the way down to the ground, or you have to cut it apart all the way down to the ground. Whatever. Okay, so in that case, in other words, Marsha asked the question, actually. I mean, according to that, it comes out, I mean, why would Rava want to say that the Mishnah is going only according to Rish Lakish? Then what's Rav Yochanan going to do? Then which opinion in the Mishnah is Rav Yochanan following? And Marsha leaves it as a question. You have one of the Achronim, I think, the Lev Aryeh, says that maybe Rava would say, we're assuming all this time that there's an exact similarity between leather and an oven, that whatever applies to one applies to the other. Rava would say, not necessarily. Fine, Rav Yirmiyah, you want to assume that they're the same. I'll answer to you that the Mishnah would be only according to Rish Lakish in that case. But actually, I myself might hold that there's a difference, that leather is different than an oven. Okay, fine. Okay, Omar, so now let's go back to the Mishnah. We said Choker L'Shloisha. We said that you divide the oven into three parts. The question is, why do you have to divide it into three parts? Uriminu, I have a contradiction. Another Mishnah in Masechta Kelim says, Tanur, an oven, Tchilosai Arba, the beginning is four tefachim, meaning there's no such thing as a Tanur less than four tefachim tall. So if you built one less than four tefachim tall, it's not considered a Tanur, and it's not Mekabel Tumah. And you have to realize, by the way, I mean, as a Kli Cheres, it would be Mekabel Tumah like any other. But when it's attached to the ground, normally things attached to the ground are not Mekabel Tumah. Xeris HaKosu, that an oven is Mekabel Tumah, even if it's attached to the ground. But here, if you built a less than four tefachim tall, and remember, they use their ovens not like our ovens open from the side. Their ovens open from the top. You would put in the thing we learned before. You would put a spit vertically in from the top or whatever. So if it's less than four tefachim tall, it's not really functional as a normal oven. There's not enough room. Well, then maybe that may be also. But the point is also there wouldn't be enough room really to build a fire at the bottom of it and still have room on the top to cook your food or bake your bread or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so Tchilas Abba, Ushyar of Arba, and also the remainder of it is also four Tfachim, meaning, again, if it was a larger oven and then it became Tame and you broke it, you have to have no piece of it should be four Tfachim or taller. Divrei Rav Meir.
In height.
No, we're talking about in height. We're talking about in height. Divrei Rav Meir. V'chamim, and the Chum say no. The four Tfachim is V'medvarim V'gadol. This four Tfachim that you're talking about only applies if the oven is a big one, a normal size oven, in other words. But there's such a thing as a small oven, which Rashi described. You have, let's say, for example, you make a kid size oven, for example, I guess for kids to practice, for kids to practice baking or to play or whatever. So there you make a smaller oven. So then the Chachamim say, Tchilase kol shehu, mishatigamim alach. So then the beginning of it is kol shehu, even if it's only very small in height. Once you have Zman Malacha, once you finished making it and you fired it up the first time, even if it's only a tefach tall, it's Mekabel Tuma. Shiyarav Verubay, and if you have to break it because it became Tomei, then you have to make sure that there's no piece which is the majority of it, in height. So if, let's say, it was a kid-size oven, it was a tefach tall, you would have to make sure if it became Tomei and you broke it, that none of the pieces are a half tefach tall or more.
It's like three pieces. Yeah.
Well, 1 second. That's what we have to figure out.
In height.
No, we're talking about in height, yeah. The Kama Kol Shehu, now when we say that if you have a child-sized oven, then Kol Shehu, no matter how tall it is, it's still Makabel Tumah, how much is Kol Shehu? Pashtus, it doesn't mean, in other words, if you just made one an inch tall or something, what's the minimum for Kol Shehu for that purpose? Amri Dvei Rav Yanai, so they said in the Yeshiva, Rav Yanai Tefach. Shekane Osim Tanurim Bonos Tefach, because they do that. They make ovens for little girls a tefach tall.
No, the
pastors, I guess. Well, I mean, they obviously wouldn't be able to use it to cook much, but they would use it like when they're playing house. As a toy oven, sort of like.
It's big already.
A tefach is not that tall. A tefach is 3 or 4 inches tall. So that's not very big. For an oven.
Compared to a real oven, no.
Yeah, obviously, but that's the point. In other words, it would be obviously they wouldn't make a full size fire in there, but they would put like maybe they take like one coal from their parents' oven or whatever and put it in there and then pretend to bake bread for their dolls or something. I don't know. Whatever the point is, that a tefach is even when we say kol shehu, what we really mean is at least a tefach. Okay. So thus far the Mishnah. Now let's figure out. Taima de'ika shiur of Dalid. So what are we saying? The problem is why are we saying that? So what are we saying? That if you broke it, you have to have no piece should be as tall as four tefachim. Halakha shiur of Dalid tahar, implying once you have with a normal size oven, as long as the pieces are less than four tefachim tall, then you're good. So why over here, Dafka, do you have to cut it into three pieces? Let's say, for example, the oven is only 7 tefachim tall. Why should you have to break it into 3 pieces? You break it into 2 pieces, each one. Less than 4 tefachim.
1 second, if it's... Well, how much did you say?
Let's say it was 7 tefachim tall, which actually the Gemara is going to mention that.
10 feet tall.
The question... Okay, we're not talking... 1 second, well, that's going to be the answer. We're talking about length versus width. Amri, so the answer is like this. When we say that once you don't have a piece 4 tefachim tall, then you're good. Hasan de tsalke mitzvah. That is where you cut it horizontally. When you cut it into horizontal strips, horizontal pieces. The point is, then, this way. So then what you have, as long as you don't have any piece that's 4 tefachim tall, by itself, that's not a functional oven, because to be functional, it has to be at least 4 tefachim tall. And therefore, what you have is it's never really, even if you put it back together, it's never going to really solidly be back together. So therefore, it can't really be considered an oven anymore, and therefore, it's not Makabel Tuma. So that's when we say that as long as it's below 4 tefachim, then you're good, and it doesn't matter even if that means that you didn't have to cut it into 3 pieces. Hacha, over here, in our case, in the case of our sugya, the Mishnah that Rabbi Yirmiyah brought before, in that case, the Avde Gistira, we're talking about that he cut it vertically. He cut it into vertical pieces. So then, each piece is up. Which one? So then, obviously, each piece is more than 4 tefachim tall because it was the full height of the oven, whatever it was, 4 or 7 or 9 or whatever tefachim tall it was. So if you cut it into only 2 pieces like that stand next to each other like this, inevitably, one or the other of them is going to be the majority of it. And one, if the majority is still makabel, it still has the same tumah as before. That's why you have to cut it into 3 vertical pieces, and that way you can make sure that none of them is the majority. Okay. So that's what it is. If you cut it into two pieces, then it's no good. The bigger piece is still going to have the truma. And if you cut it, and if you think you cut it exactly in half, it's still, and we're going to say, and we're going to say that actually both of them are still tamei mesafek. So the only way to avoid it is to cut it into three, and that way you're sure that none of them has the roiv of the circumference. Okay. Fine, so that explains that. Okay. Amamar, so now we said in the Mishnah before, we quoted that the Chachamim said that when it comes to a small oven, which again we said that a small oven can be as little as a tefach tol, then if you have a piece that's ruba, if you have a piece left after you break it, that's more than half the height of the original oven, then it's still tamei. So shiur of ruba. So the question is, ruba de tefach, am I havi or fuzzy? What can you possibly do with an oven that's less than a tefach tol? If we said that even kid-sized ovens are only a tefach tol, so mela with an adult-sized oven, which is normally quite tall, then four tefachim is enough, because you can make a small fire on it and you still have room to cook or bake something on top of it. But a kid's oven, which at a tefach is just barely big enough to do anything with anyway, so if you break it and it's less than a tefach tol, why is it still tummy?
Well, we said a girl's toy.
No, that's fine, a girl's toy, but the point is, it starts out as a tefach. Once it's less than a tefach in height, you can't even use it as a toy.
Yeah.
So what should you possibly use it for?
Some toys are bigger than that.
We're saying the minimum is a tefach. The answer is, Omar Abaya, shiore gadol berubay. We don't mean that with a small oven, if you have a piece left that's more than half a tefach tall, then it's still tummy. No, anything that's less than a tefach tall is always going to be taller. What we mean is, when it comes to a large oven, if you have a piece that's the majority of the height of the original oven left, then it's still tamei. The question is, what do you mean, the majority? We just said before that as long as you don't have a piece four tefachim tall, then you're okay. The answer is, Lekasha habatanura bar tisha habatanura bar shiva. Depends. If the original oven, when it was intact, was nine tefachim or more tall, so then four tefachim is less than half the height of it. So even if you broke it such that you don't have a majority of the oven left, but because you have a piece that's four tefachim tall and four tefachim by itself is a functional oven, then it's still tamei. As opposed to
even though it's less than half of the original oven,
it's still tamei. But if the original oven was only seven tefachim tall, then once you reach rubai, once you reach beyond rubai, you broke four tefachim, and all you have is three tefachim left, then you're good, because you already got rubai and you're below three tefachim. In other words, what it has to be is it has to be four tefachim or the majority, whichever, you have to have less than four tefachim or less than the majority, whichever is the lesser of four tefachim and the majority, right? So if the oven is nine tefachim or more tall, then you have to have, it's not enough to just break the majority of the height. It's not enough to break the majority of the height into horizontal strips like this. You have to make sure that each strip is less than four tefachim in height.
Right.
If it's seven tefachim or less in height, then all you have to do is make sure that you don't have any piece that's four tefachim, and then you're good. Okay.
We do three pieces, you always need to say.
If you're good, well, three pieces, three pieces we're saying if you're doing vertically. If you're doing vertically, you have to do three pieces because there's no choice. If you do only two pieces, inevitably one of them is going to be the majority. But if you do it horizontally, you could conceivably do only two pieces, provided that the oven is small enough to be able to do that. If the oven is only seven tefachim tall, then you can cut it into two pieces, and each one is three and a half. But if it's nine tefachim, then of necessity, you're going to have to cut it into more pieces than that.
Why are they even dealing with something? Would they be the children's toys?
If it's a functional keli, because they can use it to bake like little pies for their dolls or whatever. So therefore, if it's considered.
The oven is not symmetric. Let's say you have on one side you have nine, on the other side you have seven.
As long as you have a piece four tefachim tall, then you're no good anyway. So the bottom line is, you have to make sure there's no piece that's four tefachim that's four tefachim tall. Okay. All of this was an outgrowth of what we started with on Kukhov Gimel Amud Beis in the middle of the Amud, where we had Rav Huna telling us in the name of Rav Shimon Ber Biyosi that the din that we had before about a talus that was torn in most of its length or most of its width. So we said it's tahor, and we discussed the various cases when it isn't tahor. And we mentioned, so we started this part of the sugya with Rav Huna telling us that if you have less than untorn piece, which is the size of a mapurus, a scarf or a turban or something like that, then it still has the original turban. So now Lishna Achrina, another Lishna Achrina Amila, another version of a Chachamim said of how that statement went. Amar of Huna Meshuma Bishma B'Rabbeisi Va'afilu Shia Bakadei Ma'Apoyas. That in the second lashon of Huna is telling us in the name of Rabbi Shmuel B'Rabbeisi that even if you have left of the original beged a piece the size of Ma'Apoyas, still as long as you whipped Rubai, then you're okay.
Ma'Apoyas,
we said, is either a scarf or a turban, or so Rashi translates it as a scarf. I've seen Steinsaltz, I think, one that brings sources that say that it's more like a turban. Whatever it is, the point is that a beggar that has a certain chashivus to it. So the first lashon we said is if you have that amount that's left untorn, then the beggar is still tummy. It still has its original tumma. Now we're saying even if you have that part left, as long as you rip the rubai of the length or of the width, then you're still okay.
Even though you change the actual, let's say you were... Unless it was a piece of leather or something.
No, we're not talking about leather. We're talking about cloth.
Oh.
Here we're talking about cloth. So you had
from a shirt to become, now becomes a...
That's the point. Now, that's the point. In the first Lashon, we were saying that before it was a talus, and now it's no longer usable as a talus because it's ripped more than half its length, but it's still usable as a ma'purus, therefore, Rabbuna said it still has the original trumma. Now we're saying it doesn't matter. The fact that it's not functional as a talus anymore is enough to take away the original trumma that it had.
Even if it can still be used
as a ma'apurus, right, in the second version. And within that, Amar Rish Lakish, Loishanu ala talis. So now in this second version, Rish Lakish says that would only apply to a talis, that once you ripped it to that point, then the tumor goes away. Aval or choshev, but if it was leather, it wouldn't work, because leather is important, and therefore it would still, therefore as long as you had an untorn piece that was big enough to be makabel tumor, then it's still tumor.
Which is
5x5 shlokim. Rabbi Yechanan Amar, Afilo Or Nami, Leichoshev, and Rabbi Yechanan says, no, even leather is not considered important for that purpose, and once the roiv of it was ripped, then you're good.
For people, they take every little piece.
That's fine. The point is that Rabbi Yechanan is saying that leather is still not considered, it's still bottle once you ripped more than half length. Okay. So now, according to this version, Rabbi Yochanan asks Rish Lakish one of the questions that we mentioned before, one of the Mishnayos and Kalim that we had before on Kufaf Yom Lomad Beis, that Rabbi Yochanan asks Rish Lakish. In the second version, he's also asking, we say in a Mishnah, or Tumim Midras, if you have a piece of leather that is Tumim Midras, because a Zob sat on it or whatever, Kishiv Olav L'Ritzur V'Sandolin, but you had in mind that you're planning to use it for straps or for sandals or whatever, so you're going to cut it into smaller pieces. So you have to do a meister to take away the trauma. Kivin shenosen by Ismail, once you apply the scalpel and start cutting it, tohar, then it's tohar, it doesn't have its tumas midras anymore. Divir of Yehuda, v'chamim ad shi yamitena machamishat vachim. V'cham say no, starting to cut it is not enough. You have to make sure, you have to get it to the point where there's no piece that's 5x5 tvachim left intact anywhere. Now, the point is, Kim and Mayat Miyatar. Bottom line is, even the Chum agree that once there's no piece left that's 5x5, then it's Tar. Amai, now the question is, Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, according to your logic, why should that be? Lema Choshev. We should say leather is still Choshev, and therefore it's not bottle, even if you reduced it to pieces smaller than that. The answer is, Chochev, Mayat Skinen to Kabayla Lamoshev Zot. Yes, but the case we're talking about over here in the Mishnah is where you're actually planning to use that leather for a chair, which is then going to end up being sat on by a zog. A moshav, Rashi translates to the French word, that means basically a folding chair. So therefore, if you have a piece less than 5x5, you can't use it for that. The whole reason why leather is matame chumas midras only when it's at least 5x5 tefachim is because that's considered the minimum you can sit on. So therefore, specifically, so Rish Lakish is saying, if you were planning to use the leather for something else, then yes, the Chachamim would say that even if you cut it into smaller pieces, it might still be metabol trum, less than 5x5, because leather is choshev and therefore it's not bottle, even the fact that you started cutting it. But because you're specifically planning to use it for the upholstery of a chair, therefore you still need 5x5. And then
always say that even though initially you may plan to use it for the upholstery of a chair, you may change its use.
If you want to change its use, you have to do a maisa. But that's the point. Rish Lakish is saying that as long as you have in mind to use it for the upholstery of a chair, even the fact that so once you got it below 5x5, then it means you're mevatel that. So then okay, on the side of it here, it brings a different gusa from the Aruch, not Lamosha Zav, but Lamash Bazag or something like that, which also means, he also explains, it means similar to the upholstery of a chair. The difference is, unlike the gusa that we have, that's just Lamosha means for a chair, and Zav means that a Zav may happen to sit on it. In the Aruch gusa, Lamash Bazag, it's all one word that means a leather stool or a leather chair or something. Not necessarily for a Zav, but yeah, right. All right, Mishnah says, Urshi Yashal of Kazayas Buster, if you have a piece of leather, piece of skin of an animal, that you have a Kazayas of flesh of the animal still attached to it. So we're assuming, let's say, for example, it came from a nevela, so the flesh has tuma, and we learned before that the leather serves as a yad or as a shomer. So therefore, Hanegeh B'tziv Hayotu Menu, so if a person touches a strip of flesh which is sticking out from the rest of the flesh, so you have a gob of flesh in one place, and then you have a little string sticking out from the end of it. Attached to it, right. So on the side of it here, it brings also from the Aruch that a sieve actually means like a little string of fat. That sticks out from the skin. Okay. Also, he brings another explanation that it means like the liquid that oozes out of the meat. Okay. Anyway, so if a person touches that, or beside a shekinegda, or he touches a hair that's sticking out of the skin on the other side, shekinegda, which is opposite the meat, tome, then he's tome tumas nevela. We learned this earlier in the masechta, earlier in the parak. I mean, when we were discussing the whole issue of yad versus shomer. Suppose now that the skin has on it if instead of having one big glob of flesh that's a kazayas, you had two half kazayasim in different places on it, then Rabbi Shmuel says in that case then there'll be matame if the person carries the piece of skin with the flesh attached, because after all he is carrying but he won't become tummy by touching it, because you can't touch the two of them together, and touching one and then touching the other one is not
mitzvah. You touch them, connecting them.
If you're connecting them, that's different. But we're talking about, in other words, obviously that they're far enough apart that you can't do it. Divrei Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, I'm a loyber maga, loyber master. Rabbi Akiva says not matame by touching or by carrying, because as the mission is going to continue, the leather is mevata. We learned this concept the other day. The skin is more important than the flesh on it. When you have less than a kazayas of flesh on it, then the flesh is less important, and therefore you're mevata. We had a whole discussion before, we had a discussion a couple of days ago about Platatu Chaya, Platatu Sakin. We're going to mention it briefly in our Gemara over here. We had a discussion before about that, not necessarily, we said, is there a minimum amount of flesh for which there can be a yad or there can be a shomer? So over here, we're saying that if you only have a half a kazayas, then the skin is not considered a yad or a shomer for it, and in fact, the skin is mevat for it. Now, Rabbi Akiva will agree about a scenario where you have two half kazeitim of flesh from a nevela. If shetochman b'kesam, if you stuck them onto a stick, they sit on, and then you move them, true tome. Then Rabbi Akiva says, then yes, the person will be tome for carrying nevela. Heset, which means moving, is the equivalent of carrying. Carrying doesn't actually mean that you pick something up and carry it from point A to point B. Heset, which means moving it like that, is also considered a carry.
He took a stick.
He stuck one half kazayas of nevela onto one end of the stick, another half kazayas of nevela onto the other end, and then he moved the stick and moved the two half kazayas along with it. Then Rabbi Akiva says he is going to be tummy.
So it's like a camouflage, you put a piece of meat in one piece, you move it up, and you
another
piece of meat.
Well, it doesn't really matter which end. The point is that even though you don't have a kazayas connected together, nevertheless, he's still tomei. So why would Rabbi Akiva say tahar when it comes to when the two half kizaisim are attached to the skin? Because the skin is mabasal them, because the skin is more important than the flesh, as opposed to when they're stuck onto two ends of a stick or even one end of a stick or whatever.
No,
and there's no leather or there's no skin over there to be mabasal them and therefore. Okay. Fine. So Gemara starts off. Omar Ola Omar Rabbi Yechanan. Loi shonu ela platatu chay. The same distinction that we had the other day in the Gemara, that we're talking about this case where you have a kezias of flesh attached to the skin, that we say it's not bottle, and therefore if a person touches even the sieve or a person touches even the hair that he's on, right, that would only apply if the kezias is there because a wild animal, like a dog, bit the animal, and therefore you have some flesh, therefore you have a kezias of flesh attached to the skin. So then he's not, so he didn't do anything to be mevatel it, and he may not plan to be mevatel it. He may plan to scrape that off the skin and eat it.
And the fact that he didn't plan anything,
that makes it that it still has tumah.
Still...
Avo platatu sakin, but if it was left over when he was skinning, that it was left over by the knife, that it was accidentally sliced off when he was with the skin while he was skinning the animal, bottle, then even if you have a kezias, then it will be bottle because then he doesn't plan necessarily to keep it. Amalei Rav Nachman la'ula. So Rav Nachman says to Ula, Amar Rav Yechanan afilu katarta. Did Rav Yechanan really say that even if, what if it's not a kezias? What if it's the size of a tarta? Which is, Rashi says two explanations. One, he brings from his Rebbe that a tarta is a quarter of a calf, which is much larger than a kezias. Because you have two or three kezias that make up a kebesa. And then you have six kebesim in a lug. And then you have a log is a quarter of a calf, so we're talking much more than a kezias. So even if it's that much, or Rashi says another explanation, if tarta means the size of a pan of a balanced scale, so you're telling me even then it would be bottle because platatu sakin. Amalei ein. So Ula says yes. Rabbi Yechanan would say even in that case it's bottle. He says afilu kenafia, even if you have a piece as big as a sieve. Amalei ein. They had a standard size sieve in those days. I don't know. Go into somebody's kitchen and ask to see and look at their sieve. I don't know. Anyway, Amalei ein. And again, Ula says yes. Even then, Rabbi Yechanan would say it's bottle. Amalei. So Rabbi Nachman says, I can't believe it. Harlekim. I swear in Hashem's name. Im Amalei Rabbi Yechanan mipume. Even if Rabbi Yechanan personally had told me this, instead of that, I'm just hearing it secondhand from you, Ula. Lord say yisnevay. I wouldn't listen to him. I can't believe that he would say such a thing. Yeah, that's such a big piece. It shouldn't be bothered. Well, he saw it, Rabbi Oshia. When Rabbi Oshia moved from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechelele Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Oshia met up with Rabbi Ami. Amr l'shmaite kamei. And he told him over he told him over what happened in Bavel. Whenever the Chachamim traveled from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel or vice versa, they would always report what's happening in the other place. So this way that you see throughout Shas that we always have, you see that they were, yeah, this way you see throughout Shas that the Chachamim of Bavel are always familiar with what's going on in the Yeshivas of Eretz Yisrael and vice versa, because there's always reports being brought back and forth. So Rav Oshia tells Rav Ashi, Amr l'shmaite kamei, he tells over this whole discussion to him, Hachi Amar Ula v'hachi aha adehle Rav Nachman. This is what Ula said, and this is what Rav Nachman answered. Amalei, so Rav Ami says, I don't understand how Rav Nachman could get away with that. Umeshum that Rav Nachman chasne de ben Yisiyahu, just because Rav Nachman is the son-in-law of the Nasi, meaning the Reish Galusa, and he was in the Mizalza b'shmaite. Does that give him the excuse to treat contemptuously like that? What Rav Yechanan says? What do you mean? What kind of a statement is it? Yeah. Okay. Does that give him a right to treat carelessly the statement of Rabbi Yechanan? Well, Zimnin, another time, so that was the end later on after that. Ashkechei, Rabbi Oshia met Rabbi Ami, the Yosef Ka'amalah Sefer, that he was sitting and saying that this part, about that this thing, about the distinction between Platatu Chaya and Platatu Sakin, is referring to the Sefer of our Mishnah. Not to the ratio, like we were saying before, that even if there was a kezias, it's not metame if it was platatu sakin, but rather to the sefer, that where we have the machloikas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva about if you have two half kezias, that Hoyu all of Shnei Chatzoi Zeis, something that we said of it, or if there were two half pizasim on the skin. Metamim b'masav le'memaga divrei Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel says the person will be tamei if he carries it, because then he's carrying an entire pizayis at once, but not by touching it, because you can't touch them both at once. Rabbi Akiva oim le'memaga b'le'memasa. So on that, because the skin is b'masav them, on that, says Rabbi Ami, this time, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, that Rabbi Yechanan says on that, lo'shanu ela platatu chaya, that this is only talking about when platatu chaya, that's when you have a machlokes. Ava platatu sakin bottle, but if it was removed by the knife when you were skinning the animal, then it's bottle.
So now there's no room for
Rav Nachman's question anymore. Rav Nachman was wondering how is it possible, even if it was the size of a tauta, even if it was the size of a sieve, that it should be bottle if we're referring it to the sefer, then you don't have it. Never going to be that size. We're talking only a half of today. So sure, in that case, it can be bottle.
Because we could say that
if Platatu Sakin, even then Rabbi Shmuel holds it's not bottled for the skin, Rabbi Akiva holds that it is. Amale, so Rabbi Oshia says to Rabbi Ami, Mar Asefa Masmila. So you are learning that this statement of Rabbi Yechanan is referring to the Sefer, not to the Resha. Meaning, in other words, and if it had been that way, then Rabbi Nachman wouldn't have had any objection to that. So Rabbi Ami says, yeah, that's how we learn it. The Ela Ula Aresha Amir Nialaihu. So what? Did Ula, when he reported Rabbi Yechanan's statement, did he report it as referring to the Resha? Amalei Ein. And Rabbi Oshia says, yes. Amalei. So Rabbi Ami says, no wonder then. Like Kim, I swear in Hashem's name, even if Yeshua ben Nun personally had told it to me with his own mouth, I wouldn't listen to him. In other words, he's saying basically Rav Nachman is right after all. Yeah, he's not just saying it because he's the son-in-law of the Reish Kabbalah and he figures he can get away with it. It's true. Ula misreported it, as we were referring to the Reisha. No wonder Rav Nachman was so surprised and he couldn't believe it. If somebody told me that, even if Yeshua ben Nun personally told it to me. Now, why does he say Yeshua ben Nun? Why doesn't he say Moshe Rabbeinu himself told me? After all, Moshe Kibbol Torah Mitzinai. So why are we starting with Yeshua? There's an interesting thing that there's a sefer from one of the Rishonim called Orchus Chaim. It's sort of like a proto Shulchan Aruch, but quoted widely by the Rishonim and the Achronim. So in it, he mentions if a person says to somebody else, even if you were like Moshe Rabbeinu, I wouldn't listen to you. Then the Orchus Chaim says you give him Malkus for that because he's being mezalzel in Moshe Rabbeinu. Because it makes it sound like you wouldn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe spoke to Hashem upon him. Yeah, the Taz actually learns a little differently that the Zilzal and Moshe is how can you even think that anybody could be like Moshe, like Komod Navi be Yisrael. So that's one explanation why in our Gemara, why Rabbi Ami is using the expression, even if Yeshua ben Nun had told me, then I wouldn't. But in other words, he wouldn't have used the expression about Moshe Rabbeinu because it would be disrespectful to do that.
So the initial version?
The initial version was what Ula was saying was Rabbi Ami is telling us is not correct. Rabbi Yechanan had actually told his case as referring to the Sefer. We are only talking about half a Kazayas here and half a Kazayas there. So there is an upper bound less than a Kazayas. In the ratio, there has to be some kind of upper bound. Yeah. Another interesting explanation that they bring has to do with the fact we know that Moshe Rabbeinu, there's two ways in which Moshe could come up with a halacha. One is that he comes up with it on his own from his own analysis, like all Talmid Chachamim throughout the generation, and the other is he hears it by Nevuah from Hashem. Whereas from Yeshua and on, you don't have that Torah Lo B'Shamayim. And the Gemara actually tells us that they asked Yeshua, we'll learn in Masechet Shmura in a few months, says Hashem, that there was in the month of Avelus for Moshe Rabbeinu, they forgot several hundred halachas. And they didn't ask Yeshua, ask Hashem what the halacha is. And he tells them that a Navi is not allowed to come up with new halachas. So that's why our Gemara mentions, so Rav Ami is saying, if Moshe Rabbeinu had told me, fine, it's not necessarily something that came up with logical analysis. It could be something he learned by Nevuah from Hashem. Fine, then I have no choice but to accept it. But if Yeshua ben Nun tells me, then it has to be by logical analysis, I wouldn't listen because obviously there's got to be some kind of flaw in that logic.
Yeshua ben Nun is Yeshua ben Nun.
Of course, he's saying that there's no possible logical reason to say that it should apply even if there's a tauta or
so. What happens?
So in the end, the Gemara says that Othniel ben Knaz was able to reconstruct them with his pilpul. Well, we'll learn it in Masechet Tumura in a few months.
All the halachas.
The ones that have been forgotten. We'll see in the Gemara there. Maybe there were still some that remain forgotten. Well, let's not get into that now. We're going to have to. He also Robin b'chol nechosi. On the other hand, when Robin and all the other chachamim who traveled back and forth between Babel and Eretz Yisrael, nechosi literally means the ones who go down, because they went down Eretz Yisrael, Gavoya Mikol HaRotzos, and they went down to Babel. Different gears over here that says from Marshal of Nechose Yama, the Chachamim who would travel by sea. Anyway, when they came to Babel, Amrua HaReisha, they said that after all, Ula's version was right. Rabbi Yochanan's statement is referring to the Reisha. So the question is, Ve'el Akasha, okay, then you have Rabbi Nachman's problem. Then you have Rabbi Nachman's problem. How large can you go already and will still be Babel? The answer is, Kedah Amr of Papa, the Merudad, like we have later on in our Surya, where Rav Papa explains a certain case as referring to where the piece of meat is long and thin and then and spread out, the hachanami b'merudah. So we can say the same thing we're talking about over here. We're not talking about that you have a chunk the size of a napia or the size of a parrot or whatever in one place. For sure, that's not balsa. We're talking about if it's spread out thinly over the skin, such that you'd have to have the whole trouble of gathering it all together. Then we could say then Rabbi Yechonon would say that's balsa. So therefore, no kind of, so we assume that there's a certain upper limit. But once you get to the size of a couch or a napia, how could it possibly be bottle? So now we're saying it depends whether we're talking about a chunk, where then it's definitely not bottle, versus where we're talking about where it's spread out thin, where then it's klopatu sakin, and it's spread out thin, where it's not going to bother going and reassembling it, then it can be bottle. Okay.
So when we think about the other one, where the animal bit into it,
yeah,
isn't that part that's become like disgusting? Who wants to have that part?
Well, I mean, I guess in modern terms we would look at it that way, but in those days people were less fastidious. I mean, they had less to eat anyway, you know. So I guess they weren't so picky.
That'd be chashuv.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it would be chashuv enough for them to bother with you. Okay, fine. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Hoyu Olav, we said that if you have two half kazesim on the skin, so we said Rabbi Shmuel says matamim b'masa v'lo b'maga, and Rabbi Shmuel says lo b'maga v'lo b'maga. And the point was that Rabbi Shmuel is saying, the point is that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are both saying, because you have the two half kazesim are spread far apart on the skin so that you can't touch them both at the same time, then therefore they don't combine together for the tumah of maga. Only according to Rabbi Shmuel for tumas maga. So Amar Bar Pada. So Bar Pada says on this, Loshonu elamei achrav. This is when Rabbi Shmuel is saying, when Rabbi Shmuel is saying that's bottle as far that bottle as far as maga, but not as far as masa, he's only talking about when you touch the other side of the skin. Given that the meat is not even a kazayis, then you don't then the skin is not considered a yad or a shoymer. Now Rashi points out we actually had a machlokas earlier in our perek on the subject: how small does a piece of food have to have in order to have a yad or a shoymer? So we had a couple of opinions over there. We had the Tanakama versus Acherim, where the Tanakama had said, in that Braisa, had said that if you have less than a kazayis, then it's not a shomer. So fine, Rabbi Shmuel holds like that opinion. So therefore, the other opinion was that even if you have only kapoil, even if you only have a piece the size of a bean, then it can still be considered a shomer.
And that was who?
That was Acherim, which is usually Rav Meir. Yeah, so we said over there, Rav Yehuda, I'm a coolest Yeshala Kazayis Basar, Gereris Kol Vatroma. So yeah, only if it's Kazayis, not less than that. So Rav Shmuel holds like that. Okay. Fine. So anyway, so Bar Pada is saying, if you touch the other side of the skin, where the side that the flesh is not attached to, then yeah, because you only have two half Kazayim, then the skin is not considered a Shomer, because each piece is only half a Kazayis. Therefore, you don't become Tomei. But if you're touching the side that actually has meat, in other words, if you actually touch the half kazayis and then the other half kazayis, yesh negeah b'chos v'negeah. Then yes, touching one half and then touching the other half does combine together, and the person becomes, yeah, but practice even if it's two different times, and therefore the person will become tummy.
You don't think the skin is a musk?
No, because in other words, so he reached over to this part and touched this half kazayis, then he reached over to this part and touched this half kazayis. Yeah, he's touching the meat directly, so Rabbi Shmuel is going to say it combines together. So it says Bar Pada. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, there's no such thing as negeah v'chos v'negeah. Two touchings of each less than a kazayis don't count together. Okay. The Azir Rabbi Yochanan, the Taimei, and Rabbi Yochanan in saying that is going according to his own shitta. the Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Shmuel, Rab Dosef, and Hokinas Amru Davar Echad, because Rabbi Yechanan says that you should know Rabbi Shmuel of our Mishnah and Rabbi Dosef and Hokinas in a different Mishnah are both saying the same thing. They're both following the same logic in halacha, which, by the way, usually also means to say, usually we say that when we say ein halacha kashita, when you have an amora points out that this Tana and this Tana all hold the same thing, usually that means that the halacha is not like it. Because it implies, in other words, only they hold this logic, but the other chacham is weird. Anyway, the point is that Rabbi Shmuel is saying over here with what Rabbi Dosef and Hokinas says, which Rabbi Dosef and Hokinas also talks about this idea of a source of Tumah that was split in half. So Rabbi Shmuel Hadamar, and Rabbi Shmuel's statement is what we just said, that according to Rabbi Yechanan, as long as you don't have a whole kezias in one place, you touched one, and then you touched the other one, it won't combine together. Rabbi Dosef ben Hokinas, where do we see Rabbi Dosef ben Hokinas saying something like that? Yeah, wouldn't matter. Rabbi Dosef ben Hokinas. No, it doesn't matter. Rabbi Dosef ben Hokinas, the Tnan, and we know, what was Rabbi Dosef ben Hokinas say? There's a Mishnah in Ahlos that says like this, Kol ha-metamin ba-oil, any kind of source from Tumas Mess that is metamin ba-oil. So we know that there is various things from a mess that are metame. All of them are metame b'mago v'masa. Some of them are metame b'oihol, some of them not. For example, a small amount of bones, we learned earlier in our parak, if it's not a quarter calf and it's not a skull or spine, and it's not roiv binyan and roiv minyan, etc., then it's not metame b'oihol, only b'mago v'masa. So any of the things from a mess that are metame b'oihol, if they were divided in half, the ichnisim l'sechabayis, and then he brought them in separately into the house. So let's say, for example, you have the first example Rashi brings is, let's say, kezayis of a mess. So let's say you took the kezayis, you split it in half, and then you brought in one half kezayis, and then you brought in the other half kezayis. Rab Dosef ben Hokinas Matar v'chacham matamim. Rab Dosef ben Hokinas says in that case, the house, the contents of the house are not tomei. Because he's saying that it's one at a time, and therefore the two oihels don't combine together because the house is overhanging this piece over here and that piece over there. So therefore,
they're not touching.
In other words, right. So therefore, so you have, like, it's so to speak, like, different parts of the house are overhanging over different parts of the kezias, and therefore it's tar. The chamim matamim, whereas the chamim say it's tame because after all you have a full kezias in the house. So the point is, what does this have to do with what we just said according to Rabbi Shmuel? Lav Amar Rabbi Dosef ben Hokinas Chosam. Don't we see then that Rabbi Dosef ben Hokinas is saying over there a mile over chozer a mile that you don't have that you don't say that the house is overhanging one half kezias and then it's also overhanging the other half and therefore they should combine together. That's exactly what we're saying. Therefore, Hachanami, the same thing according to Rabbi Yechanan, according to Rabbi Yechanan's understanding of Rabbi Shmuel. A negeya v'chozer v'negeya. Then you don't say that it's touching and then touching again. It doesn't combine together. So the same logic. Okay. The question though is umid Rabbi Dosef and Hokinas to Rabbi Shmuel. Okay, but if you're telling me that Rabbi Dosef and Hokinas agrees with Rabbi Shmuel, necessarily that would mean Rabbanon to Rabbi Akiva. Then by elimination, it would mean that Rabbanon in that Mishnah and all those who disagree with Rabbi Dosef and Hokinas would have to agree with Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah. How can that be? Rabbi Akiva Tahuri Komatahar. In our Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva says that not only if you touch the two halves, then you're Tahur, but even if you carry them, you're Tahur. And there in the Mishnah, the Chachamim are saying that the house is Tomei.
Did you carry them? Or why?
Because we said the skin is the mouth of them. But the Gemara doesn't realize that point yet, basically. But so the question is, if you're telling me, so fine, Rabbi Dosef ben Hokinas over there is Makel and over here, with all those, because he says that the two halves don't combine together, and okay, over here also Rabbi Shmuel is also Makel if he touched one and then touched the other. Fine, but the respective opinions that they argue against, the Chachamim over there are Machmer and Rabbi Akiva, and our Mishnah is Makel. So what would be the if Rabbi Dosef and Hokinas and Rabbi Shmuel are agreeing, it would have to be that the Chachamim over there are agreeing with Rabbi Akiva over here, but they come out to opposite conclusions. So how is that? The answer is Ab Kam Lokam Matayr Rabbi Akiva El Ba'ur. Yeah, but in our Mishnah, the only reason Rabbi Akiva is being Mataharit is because you're talking about pieces, a half kezias sized pieces that are attached to a piece of leather, to a piece of skin. Ava ba'alma matame. Usually Rabbi Akiva would say that two pieces do combine together, and therefore matame.
When it's not skin.
Kidikatani sefer, as in fact we said in the sefer of our Mishnah. Umoide Rabbi Akiva bebeiz chatzoi zeitzim shetochman bekeisam v'yisitan. We said at the end of our Mishnah that Rabbi Akiva agrees if you were to take two half kazeitzim and stick them onto a stick, v'yisitan, and then you move them, shu tome, then he would be tome. So why is Rabbi Akiva saying in the case where they're attached to the skin that it's torn because the skin is mevatel? So nothing to do with the question of whether in general Rabbi Akiva holds that two half kizaisim can combine together one after the other. In this particular case, because they're attached to the skin, it's a special situation.
So if you had even 10 pieces of meat, you would say the same thing.
But that's as long as none of them is a kizais, yeah. By the way, as far as this case where they're attached to the stick, Tosfos says that actually it doesn't even matter whether they're attached or not. Even if they're not attached, the example Rabbi Akiva gave in the Mishnah, which we're quoting now in the Gemara, is where you took the two half kazeisim and stuck them on a stick. But actually, Tosfos says Rabbi Akiva would say by the same logic that the person becomes tameh even if they weren't on a stick at all. Even if you just had two half kazeisim sitting on the ground, let's say, and he touched one and then he touched the other, Rabbi Akiva would also say that he's tameh. Okay, Rav Ukva bar Choma says, I have a contradiction to this understanding of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. A Braisa says, when the Pasuk says, the Tosfos says the reason why we're mentioning the example of the stick is because we're mentioning that given that Rabbi Akiva is disagreeing with Rabbi Shmuel, where they're attached to the skin, he wants to inform him, but you should know there is a case where they're attached together by something else where I will agree that it becomes tummy, namely where they're attached by a stick. Okay, you have other explanations.
All the rest would disagree.
Well, in the case where they're attached to the skin, we said the skin is mavatas, according to Rabbi Akiva.
If they're attached to a string, let's
say. Same thing. A string wouldn't be any different than a stick. Again, according to Tosfos, as long as they're not attached to a skin, it doesn't matter what they are, whether they're attached to a stick, whether they're not attached at all. Either way, he'd become tummy by touching one and then the other, according to Rabbi Akiva.
Only a skin would.
Only the skin is mavatas. Okay. Fine. Mosiv of Ukva Bachoma, a bright...
If you have meat that's attached to... The horn, let's say.
I don't know, what's the difference?
Two pieces, okay.
Are you asking whether the horn would be involved with them? I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. And the truth is, I mean, there is a different way of understanding our Gemara also, that there's a concept called Ein Chibure Adam Chibur, that something that's attached by human hands is not considered connected together. So there is a different way of understanding our Gemara that over here the only reason he's Tomei is because he's actually moving a whole Kazayas at once, but otherwise we wouldn't consider them connected unless there was an actual. I think there's another explanation. I think you have no Sekelim on that. I'm understanding that way, if I remember correctly, that Rabbi Akiva is only talking about like when you have a thin strip of flesh connected to him.
From
the two ends of a stick. Yeah, something natural. Okay. Anyway. Most of Rav Ukva Bachom.
So maybe.
Okay. Most of Rav Ukva Bachom. A Braisa says that if a person touches a nevela, bini vlossam, the process of negeh bini vlossam yitma, if a person touches their nevela, then it becomes tomei. Bini vlossam means v'loy ba'or sheyesh ala beis chatzoi zesim. So that comes to exclude the case where you have a piece of skin of the animal that has on it two half kizesim, because you can't say v'negeh bini vlossam, because there's no touching, which is a shear, where there's no touching, no complete touching, which is a kizayis. Yachol Achamasa, you would think then that he shouldn't be Tomei from carrying it either. Tamad Loma Bahanoise Yitma, Diver Rabbi Shmuel. No, says Rabbi Shmuel. No, but the pasuk continues, but if he touches it, then he becomes, that if he carries it, he becomes Tomei, implying even in that case. Rabbi Akiva Omer, no, Hanegeya Vanoise. Rabbi Akiva says, yeah, but you have, the Pasuk is talking about, the Pasuk back to back, the Pasuk talks about touching a Nevela and carrying it in a Nevela. So therefore, we have a Hekesh between them. Es Shebalachla Maga Balachla Masa, only when you have something to which Tumas Maga applies, then only then does it also have Tumas Masa. Loy Balachla Maga, but if it's not in the category of Maga, and you agree, Rabbi Shmuel, that it's not in the time of Maga, because you don't have a complete Kazayas, then Loy Balachla Masa, then it doesn't come into the category of Masa either.
Since the two talk about one.
Since one after the other, right. So anything that could have Tumas Maga can have Tumas Masa, but if it doesn't have, if it can't have Tumas Maga, and in this case it can't because it's two half to basin, then it doesn't have Tumas Masa either. So that's Rabbi Akiva. And Tosfos points out, Rabbi Akiva himself doesn't really need that hekesh anyway. He himself holds skin as mevatel anyway. He's saying, according to Rabbi Shmuel, you don't hold of the concept of skin as mevatel, but what are you doing with this hekesh between maga and masa? Okay, anyway, the point is, the im itza, now, you, Barpada, are telling me that there's a difference between whether you touch the other side of the skin or whether you touch the pieces themselves, and you're telling me that if you touch the pieces themselves, then you do become tamei according to Rabbi Shmuel. So in that case, what is Rabbi Akiva saying? What do you mean? In that case, then you're able to become tamei from Tumas Masa by touching the actual pieces according to Rabbi Shmuel. Because he says, and not and therefore, so what are you? So what is Rabbi Akiva saying that it shouldn't have Tumas Maga or Tumas Masa? It shouldn't have Tumas Masa because it doesn't have Tumas Maga. Rabbi Shmuel should answer him according to Barpada. Of course, it can have Tumas Maga if you touch this piece and then you touch this piece, then you're tamei. Amar Rava, hachikama. Fine, but Rava says, right, but what the Braisa means is as follows. What Rabbi Akiva means is, Esher Bolach La Maga B'chol Tzad, something where Maga would apply no matter which side you touched, whether you touch the side of the skin where the meat is or whether you touch the other side, which is only skin, only those, Bolach La Masa, only those are also subject to Tumas Masa. But loy bolach la maga b'chol tzad. In this case, according to Barpada's understanding of Rabbi Shmuel, you're only going to become tomei if you touch one side, the side that has the actual meat on it, not the other side.
So half here and half
there. No, fine. That's right. You have a half here and half there. That's the point. Though, yeah, you have a half over here and a half over here on one side of the skin. You have nothing on the other side. So therefore, so Barpada is saying that if you were to touch this side, you wouldn't become tamei, according to Rabbi Shmuel. But if you touch this side, you would, even if you touch this piece and then this piece.
Right.
So Rava is saying, right, but the reason why Rabbi Akiva is objecting in that case, it shouldn't have Tumas Masa because it doesn't have Tumas Maga, he's not saying it never has Tumas Maga. Rabbi Shmuel could answer him, sure, it could have Tumas Maga, but it only has Tumas Maga from one side. Whereas normal Tumas Maga means no matter which side you touch it from, you become tamei. And over
so
here, you don't have it.
So
Barpada's understanding still works with this braisa.
Right.
That Rabbi Akiva is saying, when do I say, when would something have Tumas Masa? Only if you're able to touch it from any side and become tamei. But over here you're not, because it depends whether you touch the side with the meat or the other side. Yeah. Loy bolach la maga b'chol tzad. But if it can't be touched on all sides and you're equally tamei, loy bolach la masa. So therefore, so it can still work. It can still work with Barpada's understanding.
Even though we're saying that the leather is mevatel.
Right? Rabbi Akiva is saying the leather is mevatel, the skin is mevatel. Rabbi Shmuel disagrees with that concept. Yeah. Okay.
And leave it with back to back that only took on the same side.
What?
The limit that we said if you have one plastic back to back with other plastic.
Oh, so Rabbi Akiva would say I don't even need that limit because he would say the skin is mevatel anyway. He's arguing to Rabbi Shmuel you should at least pay attention to the hekesh and therefore that you should be learning from that. If there's no maga, then there's no masa. Rabbi Shmuel disagrees with that. He doesn't use that hekesh or uses it for something else, whatever. Okay, fine. So Rabbi Ibyasava asked Rabbi Barabhuna the following question. All this time we've been talking about a piece of skin that has meat attached to it. A half kazayas here, a half kazayas there.
The
halacha is Rabbi Akiva, as usual. Halacha is Rabbi Akiva
mechaveiro.
Yeah. Okay.
Not mechaveiro.
When Rabbi Akiva argues with the chachamim, then the halacha is like them. But when he's arguing against one individual tanner, then the halacha is like him. Okay. So, bombing of Ibyas Sava Mirabba Baravon. All this time we've been talking about a skin that has a half kazayas here, a half kazayas there. What about coolest stuma? What about if you have a closed thigh bone, or coolest is a thigh bone, but it means any kind of long bone that usually has marrow inside it. So there's no flesh on the outside, let's say, but there's marrow on the inside, and it's closed up. So there's it's closed up. So there's no you're not able to touch the marrow inside. If there's a hole in it, we're going to learn. If there's a hole in it, we're going to learn later on the next block on Kukfa Chayim and Beis that if there's a hole in it, then
there are always little holes in the bone.
No, we're not talking about microscopic holes. We're talking about visible holes. Big enough to be visible, but as usual, halacha doesn't care about halacha doesn't care about microscopic things. But actually, the next Mishnah is actually going to talk about this case of if the bone has a hole in it, then the dinim of when you become tamei, the mago of master. But if it's sealed up, then then
the hole is sealed.
If there's no holes, if the bone is sealed on all sides, so you can't touch the marrow, so then you're not tummy. So the question is,
well, yeah, obviously.
Well, and it's not so obvious. It's not so obvious. We're going to talk about it in the next mission. Hold on. Okay. So anyway, so again, coolest stumel Rabbi Shmuel, Ma'usha Tatami. According to Rabbi Shmuel, would we say that, now the next Mishnah says that when it comes to a coolest of a nevela or a sheret, which doesn't have a hole in it, then you're not tahor from touching it or carrying it. But what if, would Rabbi Shmuel agree with that? Or would Rabbi Shmuel disagree and say that he's tummy? Does he agree with Rabbi Akiva's basic principle that maga and masa are interdependent, and if you don't have something that's able to become a tumas maga, then it can't have tumas masa? Rabbi Akiva had mentioned that to Rabbi Shmuel in the Braisa.
Yeah.
Now the question is, does Rabbi Shmuel agree with that concept? And v'hocha hainu taima, so then the only reason why in our Mishnah he's disagreeing is mishum de balut klal maga melechona, because Rabbi Shmuel would answer, after all, there is maga over here. If you touch it on the side that has the flesh, you will become tummy. So he agrees with the basic principle. He's just saying, not like Rava is saying, that it has to be you can touch from any side. As long as you can touch someplace and become tummy, then Or does Rabbi Shmuel disagree with this whole concept of maga and masa being interdependent? So therefore, when it comes to the kolis stuma, so when you think about it, there's no maga possible, because you can't touch the marrow inside because the bone is sealed up, but you could carry it. If Rabbi Shmuel agrees with the concept that balachlam maga balachlam masa, then it would mean then he would say that he's not tummy from carrying it. Because you need to be able to do maga, and here you can't, because it's inside the bone. If you say he disagrees, then he would say you're tummy. He would say, like in all Mishnah, you can't become tummy from touching it, because you can't touch it, but you're tummy from carrying it.
No, you're carrying the whole thing.
You're carrying the whole thing, right.
And it sounds like it's a shomer or a yad.
It may well be considered a yad, but it doesn't matter. Rashi explains on the next Mishnah, a shomer does transmit tumor in both directions, but only when you are able to touch the tumor itself. Here you can't, because it's inside. Again, if we hold Bolach Lamaga, Bolach Lamasa. So that's the question. Would Rabbi Shmuel agree with the next Mishnah or not? So that's the question. Omalei, so Rabbi Barabuna answers him, Urva Parach, a raven is flying. Which means, on a simple sense, Rashi says, look, there's a raven flying over there. In other words, he distracted him by pointing to something else. Now, why did he do that? Amalei Rava Brei, so Rava, the son of Rava Bar Avuna, asks him, the Lav Heiner of Ivya Sava from Pudissa, isn't that the one who just asked you the question? That was Rav Ivya Sava from Pudissa, the Mashamachuan Mar Begave de Gabri Rabahu, and you, Rebbe, have always praised him to us that he's a great person. How could you, when he comes to you with a question like this, you just dismiss him with an irrelevant statement like that? Amalei, so Rava Bar Avuna answers, Ani hayoim samchuni ba'ashishos. Today, I'm in the situation of, like it says in the Pasuk, support me with ashishos. Ashishos, there's different explanations. It means cakes, or it means jugs of wine, or whatever. The point is, Rashi says, in other words, that I'm tired. Rashi says it was the Shabbos. It was Shabbos haregel, so it was the Shabbos during Yom Tov. So he had just been giving a long drasha. He had just been giving a long drasha to the public on the halachas of Yom Tov. Ashishas, there's two different explanations. One is that it means cakes or big loaves of bread or something, and the other is that it means containers of wine. Whatever, so it's a lashon in Shir Hashirim. Samchuni ba'ashishas, so to speak, Knesset Yisrael says, support me with ashishas because I'm feeling sick from love. I'm feeling lovesick. Anyway, so he's saying, I'm very tired. I just gave a long drasha for the Shabbos of the Yom Tov. Now I'm in the situation like the lady in Shir Hashirim and then the Moshul, who says I need to be supported by giving me good food or good wine or whatever. And here, Rabbi Yisrael came and asked me something that needs a lot of analysis, that needs a very good answer, and I wasn't in a position to give him for that, to give him that answer, and that's why I dismissed him with Urva Parach. So what's going on over here? So you have
the meaning.
Okay, so then listen, you asked a good question. Let's have a good answer. So there's actually a few interesting explanations. First of all, by the way, as far as the samchuni ba'ashisha, it's on the side here, it brings an explanation from the Aruch that another meaning is samchuni meloshin smicha. That day they had given him smicha and made him Rosh Yeshiva. And again, therefore, he had just given a big drosha, his maiden drosha, and then therefore, again, he's tired and he doesn't have... So, but why is he using the expression urva parach? So there's a few interesting explanations on it. The Chacham Sofer talks about, given what Rashi is saying, that it was during Yom Tov. Now we know Yom Tov is supposed to be chetzi l'Hashem v'chetzi l'chem. Half of the day is supposed to be devoted to learning Torah. The other half is supposed to be devoted to eating and drinking and enjoying yourself.
Shabbos?
And we're talking about on Yom Tov. Well, this was Shabbos HaRegel. It was a Shabbos during Yom Tov. Listen, the point is, therefore, now, an Oriv in Gemara is always a symbol of cruelty and denying yourself or whatever, Livnei Oriv Asher Yikro, because the raven doesn't give food to its children, and so Hashem gives to them. So always in the Gemara, the raven is always a symbol of like a person denying themselves or denying people around them or whatever the basic comfort. So the Chacham Sofer says the vote is that Rav Barapuna is saying like this. Today is Yom Tov. We've already had the half of the day that's the Oriv, the half of the day when I'm denying myself food and drink and whatever, and partitioning as if I'm learning. But that time is over. Over Porach, that's flown away already. It's time for the other half of the day. It's time for me to go to my Yom Tov meal. And all of a sudden, Rabbi Yisrael is coming over here with a complicated question. So the Over Porach is not just a dismissive thing. He's hinting to him with those expressions, you know what, Oriv time is over. Come back another time and ask the question, basically. There's other explanations. Ben Yoyada brings something that Urva can also be Meloshin Orev, like the pleasantness of my body has gone away. In other words, I'm tired, and then therefore similar idea. In other words, I'm tired, and I'm not really in any way to say it. The Ramah brings in one of his Sfarim, Torah Sa'ola, that a raven being a black bird, blackness is a symbol of like not really understanding. So like he's saying to the Ivya Savya, you don't really understand. It's a symbol of not in blackness. Like in other words, you don't have the light of Torah. So therefore, so he would be telling Rabbi Yisrael, Urva Parach, you should know your question comes from a lack of understanding. And so it's not just dismissing him by telling him, look, there's a raven flying, but also hinting to him your level of learning Torah it needs work. Yeah, you're missing the point. And then there's a variety of other interesting explanations also. One cute thing about this, by the way, if you look in Rashi, the Rashi translates, Re'ei Oda Pareach Ba'avir, look, there's a bird flying, there's a raven flying in there over there, in the air. Kolomer, he shio l'dover acher, meaning he distracted him by saying something else.
Right.
Now, the word, here you have hishio, so you have, you can also read it hishio with a sin, but then it has a different meaning. So they tell a joke about it. They tell a joke. Hisio could be Meloshin Nisui, among other things. So they tell a joke about a Rebbe who's about a Malamed who's learning this with his students or whatever, and he learns this expression Urva Parach. It's not only here you also have it. Here you also have this the same expression in Beitza. So the Talmud asks, what does Urva Parach mean? So the Malamed is looking over, and finally he finds the Rashi. Oh, I'll tell you. It means he married him off to a Chazir. What? Yeah, look in Rashi. He's Sio L'Davar Acha. So the Malamed didn't realize that the fact that he's Sio L'Davar Acha, he meant to distract him with something else. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Meloshin Hishio, Meloshin Hanachash Hishiyani Va'oichel, the Nachash convinced me, Shin Yud Aleph. Yeah, I mean to convince or to trick or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, fine. Oma Ula, okay, getting back to the Gemara, Oma Ula. If you have two half kazesim of flesh from a nevela that you stuck onto a stick, even if you're moving them back and forth, you're carrying them all day, tahar, you're still tahar. My timer, why? Because you have like this. The passage says noise, but it's written in the Torah without a vav, and therefore it can be read as if it said nisa, that it is carried. So therefore, but in a noisei v'hud nisa b'vasacha. So that means, when are you tomei from noisei, from carrying the vela, only if it could have been carried all at once, not like this where two half kazesim that are on a stick. Okay, the question is, all at once, meaning one kazesim. So the question is, Tanan, what about our Mishnah? So the question is, Amai, why should Rabbi Shmuel say he's Tomei Masa, v'halav Nisahu, based on Ula's logic? It's not Nisa, it's not all carried automatically together. There's not one piece. The answer is, Amar Papa b'merudad. So the Papa says, this is what we brought before, that the Papa says, in a different context, the merudad, that we're talking about the flesh is flattened out, this is the original context where he said it. Where you have the half kezias and the other half kezias, but there's a thin strip of flesh that connects them together. That's where Rabbi Shmuel would say that he's tummy. But if they were completely separate, then based on what Ula is saying, he actually wouldn't be tummy from carrying it. Okay. Even if it's on the same skin, right? Toshma, okay, but the next part of our Mishnah, Moed Rav Akiva b'shnei chatzori zesim shetochen b'kesem. We said that Rav Akiva agrees if you have two half kezesim that you put them on a stick, we sit on and you move them, shu tome, that he's tome, which seems to be exactly Ula's case. Va'amai v'olav nisa, who again, you have the same question, that's not something that could have been carried all at once. And the answer is, again, the same thing. Hochinami b'medrudad. There also, we can say that Rabbi Akiva is talking about a case where it's not just the two pieces are not completely separate. There's a thin strip attaching them together. So the thin strip might not be enough to be able to, if you were to pick it up by that strip, it would break. But nevertheless, the fact that now they're on a stick, or the fact that at least they're somehow connected is enough to make them tell me. But if they were completely separate, then not.
Like a gied or something like that?
Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says Kitanoi. This discussion is actually like a Machloikas Tanoim, because the Braisa says Echad Anegeya VeEchad Anmesit. Whether a person touches the two half kezesim or whether he moves them, either way, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, he would be Tomei. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Afan Noisim, and Rabbi Eliezer says also if he carries them. So the question is, what is Rabbi Eliezer adding? Also Noisim Lav Mesitu, carrying and Mesit are basically the same thing. Obviously, then, what Rabbi Eliezer must mean like this is, the Braisa means Echad Anegeya VeEchad Anmesit B'loy Nisa, even if the two pieces are not at all connected, the Tanakama would say he's still Tomei, but also Rabbi Eliezer L'meimah B'hudin Nisa. Rabbi Eliezer comes to say that only if it's carried together, both Maga and Masa, unless they're connected together and could conceivably have been picked up together, then they're not Matamei. Well, my app. So what does Rabbi Eliezer mean when he says Afanoise Ema Vahudanisa? He means only if it could have been carried together, because in other words they were attached. Rabbi Eliezer would say, when is he tome? Only if the pieces were actually attached. They may have been attached only by a thin strip, but they have to at least be attached somehow in order for him to become tome. The Chachamim would disagree by that. The halacha would be like the Chachamim, and therefore the halacha is not necessarily like this statement of Ula about Noisei and Nisa.
According to the Chachamim,
even if the two pieces are completely separate, he could still
no attachment.
They could still, well, so again, according to Tosfos, even if they're not attached to a stick, even if they're completely separate pieces, then according to Tosfos, Rabbi Akiva would still say, and that would be the halacha, that he's Tomei, according to the understanding of the Rambam, touching one and then touching the other, according to the Rambam, it still would have to be that they're on a stick or that they're somehow attached, even in order for them to be Tomei. Otherwise, if they're completely separate, then they're
Halacha,
I guess, would be like the Rambam. Well, the Rambam's not disagreeing with Rabbi Akiva. He's explaining Rabbi Akiva. So it would mean then that there'd have to be some kind of, there'd have to be some degree of attachment between them.
Right, yeah. It's a bit of a disagreement.
Not really. Okay. Because Rabbi Akiva is saying, Tochlan B'Kesim. Rabbi Akiva didn't mention the case where they're completely separate. Tosfos is saying that Rabbi Akiva would say, Tomei, even in that case. Fine, the Rambam can disagree with Tosfos.